It's the official Scottish Rugby Podcast, and Chris and I are back at Scottish Gas Murrayfield today. We're joined by two of Scottish Rugby's finest referees in Chelsea Gillespie and Holly Davidson. Great to see you both. First things first, has it been a busy day? How are we looking? How are we arriving today?
For Chelsea, maybe.
It's bank holiday, so schools and childminders are off, so yeah, busy.
So we might get a few wee sound effects in the back.
Maybe.
Great. Well, it was great to have you both. Holly, I think we just go straight in at the top for you. It's just been announced that you are going to be officiating the World Champions in July when they take on Portugal. An incredible achievement. Huge congratulations. How are you feeling about the news?
Yeah, thank you. Over the moon, to be honest. I did never really expected it to be, like, when I got the appointment. So to be going to Bloom, refereeing South Africa in South Africa, will be amazing. And I feel like I do a lot of these firsts with Portugal as well. So I obviously did Italy-Portugal last 2 years ago.
That was your first Tier 1 men's nation.
Exactly. So to be doing South Africa-Portugal, I just think it'll be amazing.
You were telling us earlier, I mean, that's not the only game you've got, but you get given your venue first, then you figure out what your role is, or you're told what your role is, whether it's referee AR1, AR2.
Yeah.
And so many, what are you going to do over the next 2 or 3 months?
Yeah, it's busy, isn't it? So I head out to Ottawa, I referee Canada, Romania there. And then from Ottawa, I head down to Bloom to ref South Africa, Portugal. And then in September, in the Pacific Nations Cup, I referee Japan, USA. So really full world tour this summer, which I can't complain, it'll be class.
And are you with the same team of four or five the whole time?
Every week it changes.
Right.
So actually really fortunate in the South Africa-Portugal game to be with Scottish officials. Mm. I'll be there with Mikey and Andrew McMenemy. And then I'll be with Sammy out in Japan. So it's class that we get to share these moments together as well and get to work as a team, which probably as Scottish refs, we don't get to do that often.
It's great to have both of you here as well because, I mean, Chelsea, for you, you've returned to refereeing after a 10-year break, a 10-year hiatus. The first thing I'm thinking about is how challenging that's been, perhaps, coming back to it, or what challenges have you faced to take a 10-year break and come back? It's just great to have you back on the scene. But I also know that can't have been an easy, easy run.
No, not particularly. I mean, it was probably really good for me. I think sometimes going away and having a reset like that is good for anyone to get perspective. 10 years was maybe, could have been maybe a bit long in hindsight, especially now I am back. I've got that massive buzz again, and that it's amazing how that competitiveness and fire can come back so quickly. I feel very lucky to be able to get that shot as well. But yeah.
You keep saying the game, and it does, it changes all the time, doesn't it? As players, officials, the game changes within seasons, but it must be almost a completely different game to what it was when you were refereeing at top level 10 years ago, is it?
Yeah.
The laws have changed, for start.
Well, yeah,
the laws are always changing. Yeah, I know. Like every week, I don't know how you keep up.
I had to get myself an updated law book just to make sure I was fine. It has, but it hasn't. I think the fundamentals are still there.
Are your processes the same?
Yeah.
In terms of your scrum set, so your lineup process?
No.
That's the building block.
Yeah.
But then I suppose player behaviour or player trends will be different though.
Yeah, oh, definitely. So it's more, I think, as I said, the fundamentals are still there. I think my process is, because I got to the level I got to, you kind of work that out by that stage. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. And you just then fine tweak it. So coming back, you've still got that there. It's the things that maybe you're looking at a breakdown are different highlights than what you were highlighted before.
Are you looking at it through a different lens now then? So when you first went into refereeing, as you say, you're learning as you go, you're constantly learning. But now you get to go back in with the hindsight of having the confidence, the knowledge, and also the life experience and maturity that means that you could perhaps enjoy it differently.
Definitely. I couldn't have said that better. I think this time round I do enjoy it more. I still put a lot of pressure on myself, but when there's so much external things going on, whereas previously it was very tunnel visioned, I didn't have anything else to worry about. It was one track mind. And so, which made when things went wrong really, really bad, because the outside world, there wasn't an outside world, basically.
There wasn't a buffer in, to what was your the epicentre of your life, which was refereeing.
Whereas now, oh, I'm spread thin.
That's it, you're having to prioritise differently, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So prior to, you know, the break that you had, the 10 years off, it was obviously a very busy time for you. There were sevens, there was 15s as well in there. Then you had a break. Now, the initial part of that break, the early part, was through meningitis, wasn't it?
Yep.
Am I right in thinking that you might have contracted that by drinking out of a trophy?
Yep. That's what they thought. They thought it was like a something to do with a cold sore virus or, yeah.
Well, that was, but that must have been quite a shock to you at that time. It was really serious.
Do you know what? At the time, I was in that one-way street focus that all I could see, all I wanted was the Olympics in Rio. Obviously, I didn't get that, thus possibly leading to such a long break. But yeah, at the time, it was bad, obviously, and it affected my parents and family more than it did probably me. Like physically, obviously, it did. However, it's only recently that Mum told me a story about she met the nurse in the hospital a couple of months ago who was nursing me, and she's now works with her, and they were kind of asking how I was and this and that. She goes, oh yeah, I always remember this. I remember the room she was in. I remember everything. She goes, it was my first meningitis patient. And she goes, we weren't so sure if you were going to make it or not. And I was like, 10 years later, that actually was what made me look back and go, oh, that means more now. Because at the time, so many people told me you were very, very unwell. Chelsea, look after yourself. Just let's be sensible. You were very, very unwell. But I was so single-minded and stubborn, being I must do this, that I didn't take it all that seriously, probably, which wasn't ideal.
Did that experience in any way contribute, I suppose, to the duration of time that you chose to take away from refereeing?
Before I left New Zealand, I'd come back into rugby and I was refereeing again, and I was concentrating more on the 15s track, and yes, so we got back to ARing some internationals and things, but then my husband came back over here. No, he wasn't then, and it was one of those situations where I was like, if I don't do this now, you'd have that realisation, I've been following this dream forever, I need to make sure the rest of my life is good as well. And then obviously when we came over here, this timing with everything, it was kind of the end of season when I was in Bury St Edmunds, and then I came up here and I was pregnant and just didn't get back into it, and then got pregnant again. And yeah, that was sort of how we ended up with such a long break.
Right. And to the here and now, you were involved with the Women's Six Nations this season. We spoke about the game changing. That's one tournament competition event that's definitely changing at a rapid rate. How was the experience this year?
It was brilliant. Ever since I started refereeing at 15, Six Nations was back then the only substantial, I guess, women's competition, and being from the other side of the world, the chances of me getting involved with that were really, really slim, because money and just everything around it wasn't like it is now. So coming back and seeing how much the game's grown, it's amazing. And I think that's why it's a real, there's a real different vibe about the women's rugby, and I feel like it's what the men's stuff used to be. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's more, I think the players are more accessible, they've got this joy, they've got a wee bit more freedom, and can express themselves a bit more.
It's like the early part of the professional era
exactly
with the men's game. Yeah.
And it was all exciting and new and fresh, and there's something special about it at the moment.
There's
sure.
a great energy, but I bet that's lit a fire in you.
Absolutely.
It was when someone new comes into camp, so down at Lensbury we have a Women's Six Nations camp, and it was Chelsea's first time obviously in March, and I was kind of like, how are you feeling about it, like met before, like the week before, just been like, can I help you with anything, like this will be the setup, blah, blah, blah. And honestly, she didn't need any help at all. It was like a
never been away.
Yeah, it was honestly like a regroup of all the Sevens girls that she used to referee with. So they were all getting selfies together. Like, it was
like a reunion.
Yeah,
high school reunion. A couple more wrinkles. And
but I guess then, coming back to the, you know, that's the next thing, isn't it? So you are you goal orientated? Are you, the fire's
yeah.
back.
Yeah, look, yeah, absolutely. I've got to be a wee bit realistic about that as well, because I'm not as young as I used to be. And if opportunities are there, I want to be able to take them.
Holly, I think the thing that strikes a lot of people with you is that you have consistently been the first female to perform at the top level of your game, and so much so I have to always revert back to this every time I speak to you, but first female assistant referee in a men's Guinness Six Nations test match, first female to officiate a tier one men's team, that was Portugal v Italy, first female to referee Rugby World Cup finals in both sevens and the 15s format, you've officiated the Commonwealth Games sevens final, you were Scotland's first full-time female professional ref. I mean, you get where I'm going, I haven't even scratched the surface here. What are your reflections on that when I'm putting that list to you? How do you consider that list of achievements?
Like, when you put it on paper, like, it sounds crazy. But I think I'm always someone that, as great as they are, I probably don't put too much value on them. Like, I always still want to improve. I always still want to get better. I still have aspirations further than probably what's on that list. So that keeps the drive and, like Chelsea says, the fire going inside. But I remember when the two of us first met, it was in Dubai 2016 at the Sevens. Mm. And I literally had just started refereeing. I was maybe like 5 months into my journey. And Chelsea had been on the Sevens circuit for a few years at this point. And I was this like quivering little wreck, like this nervous little like bean that probably didn't take a lot of what was going in, like what was happening around me. I was just so focused on the rugby. And I think as much as I have aspirations and what I've achieved is fantastic, I still want to enjoy what I'm doing. I still want to be able to take a step back and reflect and say, yeah, this is so cool, and enjoy it with the people I'm doing it with, not just be so direct on saying, okay, I've ticked that one, onto the next one, tick that one, onto the next one. Like, I want to be able to look back and say, this is class, but just actually still enjoy the journey.
Do you have to work hard at having that attitude? Because that attitude probably lends itself to the success you're having and will have. But is that a conscious decision to stay ultimately as relaxed and as fun as that? Because it's difficult to do that, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I think even a few years ago, I would get like so hit up if I got stuff wrong on the pitch. And as a ref, that is nature of the beast. Mm. Like, probably 50% of the crowd is going to agree with you and 50% of the crowd isn't. And it's trying to find that sweet spot that you're happy with your performance, even though a lot of people aren't. And I've probably driven a lot of relationships away from rugby to keep me very grounded to say, you just keep being Holly, which I think you're right, then allows me to be successful on the pitch because it does give me a little bit more perspective. And don't get me wrong, like when we're in training and when we're reviewing, I'm very open and honest. I think that's the one thing that you have to be in this job. That's how you learn. But if I'm enjoying it, then I'm
doing well.
Is that the secret then to officiating at the top level, to be able to separate the game, to be able to come away from the game afterwards, review it, yes, for professional development, but to not keep it with you beyond the 80 minutes plus one day, perhaps?
I think you have to. In this business, you're game after game after game, and if you're not able to draw a line in the sand, then at the end of the day, it's your loved ones that probably hold, like, they end up living that with you, and that's probably not fair on them. So you have the game, you review, and I think it is more the review and being open and honest in the review. You learn from it, and then you say, okay, that's that game, and you try and take the learnings into the next fixture. That's where I think the biggest point of difference is with reffing.
Is social media making that harder, though?
Yeah, I choose which social media platforms to go on and which ones to avoid. Yeah.
On that point, it's exactly the same, or it's almost exactly the same as a player. But I feel as if a player gets an earlier opportunity to put it right because you train in a group. I know you guys train together and train in threes and fours, and you do your fitness together, you do your gym together, you'll review and you'll, you know, cross-reference with other URC officials. And but ultimately, it's more individual, isn't it? Like, if I was to have a bad game or make an error, maybe not on the Monday, but it'd be the Tuesday, it's out of your system because you've physically been out and been able to hear. Yeah. But you don't get the opportunity really until a week at the earliest to put it right. Yeah.
That's what I quite enjoyed about Sevens, because you're in a tournament situation. If you had a work on, and you're like, you can get it, you can park it and move on, work on it and be like, all right, I'll fix that now, straight away. Whereas actually coming back has been a wee bit... I'm like, oh, I've got another week to go. I just want to fix it now. I know what I need to do.
Yeah.
You always get to the point, you're like, why did I do that?
And it's good, like, we get the opportunities at points to go in with Edinburgh, Glasgow, the women's team, the men's team, which, even though they're controlled environments, we're at least kind of able to practice what we do. Mm-hmm. Most of the time with the ref, you practice the 80 minutes, which sounds awful, but there's no really other environment that... where your growth and development happens is in the front of thousands of eyes.
That's one of the key things that I think that, you know, Scottish Rugby and all of the different unions have got a task on their hands of attracting people to the game, because ultimately there is a phrase, you know, who'd be a ref? Yeah. I'm sitting in front of two here. What's the sell?
Jess, I can see a real fun element for you.
I enjoy it.
You enjoy
it.
You
can see that.
And did the time away almost underline that I want to get back into that?
I was quite scared to come back into it. I came back into it to sort of help out a wee bit, because I was getting a wee bit frustrated watching and
proper ref.
Yeah, exactly.
Armchair is not working for
me. I was sitting on the stand watching my husband being like I just want to be there too. But I do enjoy myself. Yeah. I really enjoy, I guess, the personal management side of the game. And I think you probably can, if you look at other refs, you can see if they're more that way inclined or a lot more technical and in law enforcement, I suppose.
It's fun for enjoyment. You. It's fun. And what about you, Holly? How do you sell this to the next generation who are clearly looking up to you both, you know, and very impressed by what you do, but how do you encourage them to take up the whistle? What is it about this game that works?
I think it can offer you so much. Like, I think that is one element, is the enjoyment factor. And you build relationships with the players that you referee, whether that is here domestically in Scotland or it's at URC or it's internationally. Like, you build relationships with these players that you'll carry on once you've blown that final whistle and when they hang up their boots or whatever it may be. I think secondly as well, you learn so much about yourself, like so much. It gives you so much confidence, independence, maturity. Like I said, when I first met Chelsea, like, I was working in a job, thought I was, you know, quite a confident individual. And then before you know it, and before you know it, you're having to turn up to fixtures on your own. You're traveling around the world. Once you get to a location, you meet people, but you're on your own. And it's doing all of these individual things that you really develop as, for me anyway, a young adult. And then secondly, you can go on some unbelievable trips, like great locations. And you see refs here in Scotland, like, we just had guys come back from doing like sevens in the Caribbean, just being local referees. Like, these are some opportunities that you don't get elsewhere.
It's so near enough a world tour for yourself. Is it ever something that you were attracted to?
No.
To put it bluntly.
It's something I thought about, but I never thought about doing it. I often thought, I wonder what it would be like to do that. I wonder if I would be any good at it. And I don't think I would be, because I'm not committed enough to, I'm a bit open-ended. I would want the game to almost be more open. And I don't think that's the right mentality or the right mindset. You're both nodding. Do you know what I mean?
I
would just want it to be what I wanted it to be, and that's not the mentality you need to have for a referee.
It'd be absolute carnage.
It would be, and it would get worse and worse and worse, and then I'd just let it play to try and solve it, and it would get worse and worse and worse. That's the discipline, the kind of accuracy you need. I would just want to watch it as a spectator.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can have that mentality as a referee.
That's why, but equally it's a different skill set doing commentary, which you do, to be able to observe and to look at a game that you can't affect the outcome of, but you can make an analysis of it. Yeah. So
I've learned far more about refereeing through commentary than I ever did as a player. Yeah. Like, and you get 2-3 views at it, you can, you know, request another, like, but yeah, like in terms of hearing you guys when the games are on is so informative. And once you kind of do it a lot, you can hear trends, or you'll have a style, somebody else have a style, and you can, it makes the decisions much clearer and much more understandable. But I've learned far more watching it than ever did as a player. I was always quite far away from a referee, I captained for years, but I was quite often in the backfield or fullback, and I would try and use the dead time in the game, whether it was a knock or a bump or an injury or a walk, to, you know, half time or a scrum, to speak to the ref. But actually in the moment, when the ball was live, I was too far away really to feel as if I could really get an influence, rapport, I should say.
Influence. It's all coming
That's
out
what
now.
We're talking about now, isn't it?
I tell you what, this is a podcast, but if you could have seen Holly and Chelsea's eyes, mate. Hang on a minute. There's none of that in this show. I suppose the thing that a lot of people talk about in terms of the role of the referee is being able to handle the scrutiny at fine moments in the game. And it's not a new conversation by any stretch. You'll have had this conversation many, many times. But your brain must work in a way that the rest of us mere mortals can't apply, because to be under that level of pressure and scrutiny at key moments is a real skill, surely. How does it feel for you?
Yeah, I think when you watch it, things seem to go slower than maybe when you're a player or you're a referee on field. Like, things seem to go so, so fast. But through doing more games, you kind of have little triggers, and you may ask, oh, what are those triggers? I couldn't tell you. Like, they just seem to happen. Mm-hmm. And you are able to learn from other people. So you watch a lot of rugby as a fan, as a referee, as a player, you do a lot of analysis. And it's through watching those that you'll remember a clip, maybe, that you're like, okay, this is similar to what I'm seeing right now in front of me. And you're able to essentially distinguish, did I like the outcome? Was the outcome correct? Was the outcome maybe could have been done slightly differently? And so all of these things feed into your decision-making. So let's say, for example, you're out on field and you can see someone's come over the top and slapped the ball down. It happens in a split second, and you might have scanned at the time that it happens, but you know that doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And you've got a sniff of it and you're like, okay, then you go through your process. This I know needs to be the outcome of a yellow card, as an example. So yeah, your brain works in overtime.
Can you relate to that?
Totally, yeah. I'm just wondering, Chelsea, does it make it better or worse if you have a big screen with a replay? Because that it's difficult, isn't it? I think it's probably worse.
I want to say worse
replay,
as well.
I think that would be horrendous.
Or how good does it feel when the replay justifies what your instinct was?
Amazing. However, when your highs are high, your lows are low.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It was funny as well. Like, I was at a football game last week. Barca women were playing Madrid. And I don't go to football often. Yeah.
That's a good game to go to, though.
Yeah,
if you're gonna go.
It's class. But they have big screens, but zero replays. No replays. So you might disagree with the decision, but before you know it, you're kind of moving on to the next thing. Yeah. And you're right about sometimes when your decision goes up on screen and you're like, oh yeah, that looks correct. But then you're kind of like, is it that clear if 70,000 people are disagreeing with you? Maybe not. So I think there needs to be a balance between... Yeah. The replays kind of throwing refs under the bus and replays showing great tries or someone dancing down the touchline. I think they could be used better.
Also depends when you show a replay.
Mm. Yeah.
Like I've said this before about players being assessed in level of performance. If you make a mistake before there's an injury and there's 2 minutes and your last involvement was an error and you see it three times, you're like, I've had a shocker. You know, and it might be the only error you have in the game, but it does.
It is as well.
Yeah, like it depends absolutely what, you know, how many times you see and whether it's a positive or a negative thing. It's so hard. And also, the level of knowledge that the number of people that are at a game varies as well. And there'll be some there that have got as good, if not better, knowledge than some of the referees. And there'll be some there that are just caught up in the emotion. And as you quite like said, Holly, it's like 50-50 if it's a you know, maybe 50 one team, 50% for the other team. But there's a variance of understanding of the really difficult laws that are as well. So do you almost have to just shut out the noise?
I think sometimes you can get so focused on what's going on, because sometimes it can be so quick. You don't have time to listen to it, unless it's a real blindingly obvious, as you said. I've scanned and someone's knocked that on behind me. I know. But, yeah, I mean, you hear some stuff, but you don't. Yeah, if you're concentrating, you should be.
Sorry, I've got all the
questions. No, go for it. You're on a roll.
I know.
This is great.
So of all that, like, it is actually after the game worse than during the game then, in terms of how you feel about decisions?
Well, things
or
slow
scrutiny.
Down then.
Yeah,
for
that's
a start.
What I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so
do you know, like in the game, it's next thing, and then we talk at that week between referee, you know, it might be 2 weeks or whatever. So are the kind of hours after and the day after almost more difficult to process than the in the moment stuff?
It can be.
Yeah.
Like it's so enjoyable. If you've had a great game, it's so enjoyable. You get to enjoy it with your loved ones that are there, the team that you're there with. Fantastic. The worst thing probably is if you've been loving yourself out there 80 minutes and you come off and then it's like, you got this wrong,
oh, no.
You got this wrong. You're like, oh, God.
I had fun, though.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not how I processed
no,
it.
No, exactly. So sometimes you can get a bit caught off guard if the smallest things, if they start stacking up and you've not put them together, maybe the couple of hours after are challenging, but they're few and far between.
Same as a player.
Well, speaking of players then, what are the types of players that are easiest and perhaps hardest to manage in terms of the personalities? Well, take a captain, for example. We can see often a captain. We won't be naming names. But you can see captains going to get in the ear of the referee. You can see sometimes that doesn't always land as well. There might be a fractured relationship there or something doesn't quite sit. You've talked about relationships. How important is that for you both in terms of having that connection with the captains that is at a point where you're obviously in control, but they're heard, but to a point.
I think that's the key there. I have this belief that players want to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you need to, like, and it is yet another very fine line, you need to at least acknowledge them but at the start of the game, make it clear, this is when I'll talk to you, this is when we probably can't, but they're human, we're human. If I want respect, I've got to give them respect as well. So I don't like to shut people off, but I definitely enjoy a game more if I've got that relationship and you can have a communication, and a conversation with them.
Can you relate to that?
Definitely. Being able to, even if you were engaging, not even on the rugby field, the most annoying thing is if you think someone's just like pieing you off and not really taking you on. So like, if you're in the, like, for the players, heat of battle in those 80 minutes and someone that you want to engage with or just get a little bit of feedback from is just not taking you on whatsoever, I can imagine that'd be very frustrating. So like Chel said, like, you want to be engaging, but there's probably a line to say, okay, now enough's enough. You're just maybe challenging every decision I'm making.
Mm-hmm.
So then they can get that balance and there's a little bit more equity between how much time you spend with each captain. But as well, your question around like the players, I love players that kind of know that they're on the edge and maybe like try their arm a little bit and then you get like a wee smile or a smirk to say, oh, I know I'm on the edge here, but I've now left it. Like, they're the best ones.
You could easily be listening now and think that this is a parenting podcast. Yeah. It's like you are effectively
here are my boundaries. I'm just going to put my toe over.
On about players, coming up to the end of the season, is that, like, obviously quite a lot of players retire, move on, finish playing around the end of the season. Is there a conscious kind of recruitment drive or at this time of year? Because, you know, when every end of season, within your peers or people you maybe know or referees that are finishing playing now and you know, want to stay in the game. Is it a conscious decision? Or could you maybe recognise some of those players you think about when they retire and say, oh, have you ever thought about refereeing?
Yes and no. I think it's a good time of year for like societies and things to do the recruitment because there's more time to put into it. However, I think the season can be so long that sometimes people just need to
get away.
I'm not sure how to...
No, I think it's... we all know that probably the numbers within reffing is falling, and to make sure that we still have a game in Scotland and we still want to grow the game here in every capacity, we need as many people picking up the whistle as possible. So I think now is a great time to encourage those people that, do you know, at points maybe have thought, oh, how do I get involved? Or, oh, I could give that a go. And it's actually just for them to take that first step to say, well, I could start at the minis, I could start at the second 15, I could start at the first 15, go down, help out at your local club, and then get involved with the societies to say, okay, I'd like to take this a little bit further. I think that's how we keep people involved, and that's how we keep growing the reffing numbers here, and we keep providing a service to the game in Scotland.
And that then reinforces the importance, I guess, of having referee representation at the Community Games Conference, which is here at Scottish Gas Murrayfield on the 26th of May. We've got JP Doyle coming to that one. Not asking you for your assessment of of JP, but I guess that is essential, isn't it, in growing the numbers of refereeing, but also in ensuring that the community, that the clubs understand the role that referees play at all levels of the game.
Yeah, like with our sport, we are so unique and special in the case that referees are very well respected in our sport and we are part of it. It's not seen as like a separate outside entity. And I think if we can encourage that here in Scotland, to get refs involved in the conferences, involved in your local clubs, get refs down and referee your training sessions, like I think that's a great way to just keep that rugby family together. And I think it then, it just puts a different spin on things. Refs see rugby differently and might pose different questions at conferences that maybe coaches haven't considered or players haven't considered. And then you pick up people that are there that say, oh, actually, okay, sure, this sounds like something fun. I'll give it a go.
Do people ever speak to you after a game? Do punters, like if you were to go out walking and after a game, do people offer their critique or the fact
Oh, yes.
What's that like? I mean, how do you respond to that?
With reffing, again, you have to be very diplomatic and you kind of just say thanks very much and it goes in one ear and out the other, because in what other capacity is someone really giving you face-to-face critique of your work when you're away from work? So it's
a player.
Broadcast. It's a tricky balance.
But it is true. You're under the microscope slightly differently. But one thing that I think we've spoken about before is the idea of you also have to know what parts of the game to let slip. So it's not that you cannot officiate every passage of play. It's not possible to do that, is it? So it's about getting the balance right between
play on.
Getting what metas, isn't it? advantage.
Yeah, and it's like, like Mossy says, I probably like a little bit more free-flowing game. If someone has tried to be positive and they get it slightly wrong, I'd much rather I then chat them off or say, okay, we can play on. If someone is, there's a difference then between always illegal or cheating, then of course we can adjudicate that. But I think if someone has tried to do something positive for like getting the ball away or like counter-attack and, you know, that's what we want to see in rugby. We want it to be a great spectacle for the fans to engage with what the players are trying to achieve. And if within reffing, if we can just be there to facilitate that, I think that's how we get the best game.
I think that is exactly why fans and players love watching you as well, which is quite a key moment. And I guess the last one for me is, what does your downtime look like? What do you do that's away from the game that is for you and that isn't linked to rugby and to refereeing?
I think I just referee constantly.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it.
I think I get probably better outcomes on 80 minutes on a Saturday than I do at home.
Yeah, you've got two kids to keep you busy.
They keep me busy.
But that is important, isn't it? Having a life.
It is.
Away from this glorious, amazing game.
Yeah.
And we talk to players about that a lot. You're really, you know, key on that. Having that life away from the thing that you're most passionate about. We're so privileged that we get to work in something that is, we're incredibly passionate about. But you do have to have, life away from that.
I've seen a lot of TikToks recently that's like, one minute you're 23 and then the next minute you're literally painting your garden fence and you're planting your herb pot. And I was like, that is me right now. Like summer nights. Yeah, it's dreadful.
That's it. Should we do the kitchen? Well, it's so lovely to speak to you both. Chelsea, just brilliant to see you back on the scene and to be leading the way as you are with your refereeing. Great to have you back. We wish you all the very best with that. Holly, hearty congratulations. You continue to do what you do in the most understated way, but you are without doubt leading the way for so many after you. So thank you very much and very best wishes.
Thank you very much.